You make a good point because there's so many administrative jobs as well. Like there's endless opportunities in the military for people, I'm sure.
Only about 10% of the jobs are combat related.
So we could still have a job where we show up and be pretty?
You could still have that job. And yeah, of course, you'd be wearing the uniform, which I think is
sexy.
Kind of hot.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, James, have you listened to any of our shows?
I have a few.
You have? What do you remember?
Oh, geez. Why are you going to ask me a question like that? Because I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Okay, good point. Good,
Ilya.
So, Rachel, I've never met you. I don't think. You got a wonderful smile.
Look at him. Look at him, flirtatious man.
My father was a dentist, and one of his partners was an orthodontist. So I had thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of work on these teeth for nothing.
Nice.
Jealous.
I had all the things. All the things.
All the things. Well, let's do this. Hey, Warners, welcome to another episode of The Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again.
I'm Gina Tremarco, master trainer at Sales Gravy, who is now the sponsor of this show.
Woo woo. And I'm Rachel Pitts, mommy, wifey, mortgage loan officer with US Mortgage and creator of Your Ultra Fit Lifestyle.
And today we have a special guest with us. We thought we'd bring a man on the show. What? We haven't had a man on the show for a while, have we? When's the last time we had a man on the show?
I think it was Jeb.
Was Jeb the last man standing?
I think he was.
Okay. Well, you know what? Then it's perfect because we're bringing in another man from Sales Gravy. Let's welcome James Beatty, who is my coworker at Sales Gravy.
Hello, ladies.
Hey, James.
Hi, James.
Oh, my. You ladies are scaring me right now.
Why are we scaring you, James?
I feel like I'm about ready to go into a meat grinder.
No. Actually, I can't wait to hear about what you specialize in, because I think that military recruitment sounds like a very specialized area of sales and with its own challenges. I can't imagine doing that.
I think it's going to be really interesting. I've been wanting to bring James on the show for quite some time. I think our listeners are going to find it really interesting. And before we dive into more about James, it's important to know that James and I work together, but we met before we worked together. This is interesting. We were introduced by, are you ready for it, Rachel? By our good friend Donnie.
Oh, Donnie's a great connector. Donnie Bovine.
I always screw up his name.
He's a great connector.
He is. That's Success Champions.
That's right.
His group has introduced me to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So Donnie introduced us. I think what Donnie introduced us when I had mentioned that I was going to start doing some independent contractor work for Sales Gravy. And that's when he said, oh, you need to meet James. And then James and I started talking, and here we are now together. And James has been awesome to bring me with him to some of the military recruiter training. So that's been super cool. And it was a major eye opener for me because I think it'll be an eye opener for a lot of people who don't even think about this. And it's also interesting. I've talked to a few people who kind of are snarky about it. So this will be kind of an interesting topic all the way around. Military recruiting as, it's a sales job, right? Right, James, technically?
Yeah. I didn't even put the comparison together in the time that I was in recruiting, and that was almost 15 years, of how comparable that was to a sales job outside. So we had those opinions on, as recruiters, as you probably had as a salespeople, that there was no correlation between the two. And I'm interested in hearing your thoughts of what a military recruiter did before the trainings.
Oh, what my perception was before I've actually witnessed the training that we at Sales Gravy do with recruiters?
Yes, because I think your perception is probably what the general public thinks of that profession.
Yeah, I'll give you my two cents on my perception, which has been echoed by other people that I've spoken to whenever I talk about military recruiting. And I get very protective of it now that I'm in it with you, especially because I'm a huge supporter of our military. So thank you, James, for your service and everybody out there who is stepping out to protect our country and do the things for us.
Thanks for your support.
Yeah. I think my initial perception was, those people that show up at the high school and try to talk kids into like giving up their lives for the country and they might die. And they're there recruiting, trying to make you do something, almost, I don't want to say like sleazy car salesman, but in that category of selling people something that they don't want or need. That was my initial perception.
And so I hear quite often from salespeople that I speak with now that they thought people just knocked down our doors and that wanted to be in the military. And, all we did was process paperwork and tell them lies.
Yeah, that's another big piece of it, is that you're telling these recruits lies to get them in. That was another perception. Rachel, have you had a perception about that?
My life was so caught up in the arts. I never really had that much contact with anything military, but it's definitely interesting. I can see why people would think that. And I'm thinking that, back in World War I, World War II time, all those that our military were such heroes, and it was just such a, there was so much valor attached to it. And then once the Vietnam War hit, then it changed the perception of the public to the military. And I'm sure that was like a big change. And then of course, Iraq, Iran, all of that, the way that the world perceives some of the world, let's say some of the world perceives the military. And I mean, I'm amazed by anybody who has the courage to be in the military. I don't have the mental toughness, and especially some of the women that we've talked to, like, there's no way I could just hang with the push-ups.
You have mental toughness.
I'm a chicken though. If you throw a baseball at me and want me to catch it, or like a wiffle ball, I'm like, that's the part. Push-ups, running, I'm good, but I would not be able to hang with somebody shooting at me. No.
And that is the perception that we fight quite often as recruiters. What if I told you that there was you could do broadcasting and podcasts as your actual job in the military?
Oh, you make a good point, because there's so many administrative jobs as well. Like, there's endless opportunities in the military for people, I'm sure.
Only about 10% of the jobs are combat related.
So we could still have a job where we show up and be pretty?
You could still have that job. Of course, you'd be wearing the uniform, which I think is
sexy.
Kind of hot.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I'm in the mortgage industry, and the VA loan for anybody who has served in the military is by far above me on the best loan going, because it's set up as a benefit for our military. And I'm always so happy.
With a VA, 2.875, nothing down. You don't need private mortgage insurance if you have the VA loan. So that could save thousands.
It's a killer loan. Killer. Yep. Mm. What else? What other benefits? Is it too late for me?
Yeah, I was going to say, is it too late? Because, the other thing I wouldn't want to do is like the whole boot camp thing and like all those things. Like, all that sounds scary to me.
That sounds fun to me.
Well, that's okay, because if you join the Army or the Air Force, you don't go through a boot camp.
You don't?
No, it's called basic training.
They or just that. Send you over to learn how to fly a plane.
Or that.
Wait a second.
You don't want to do basic training? You need to learn the basics, though.
Like a million sit-ups and stuff?
Oh, but see, they pay for you to get in shape. Where else can you go?
Aren't they kicking your ass at the same time? Like, I would cry. I would cry being yelled at.
I am sure there were plenty of people that cried being yelled at, and they got over it.
I'm pretty sure there's a lot of tough guys that cried being yelled at who could do absolutely. A million sit-ups. So
did you, okay. Wait, James, did you cry?
Did I cry?
Yeah.
Of course not. I'm a tough guy.
at night when nobody's watching.
Yeah, the push-ups and setups is not the hard part of boot camp or basic training. The hard part is for individuals, especially like myself, where I grew up in a rural community, didn't get away, didn't travel a lot. And you take individuals from all over the country and you put them in this melting pot and you tell them to do the exact same thing at the exact same time, the exact same way, and expect them to be able to do it. And it gets so frustrating because, you know, everybody's beliefs, everybody's values, the way that they were brought up to do things are different across the country. And now you're telling them you've got to think and act and do the same thing. And that's basic training. I'm not saying that the military is making you do the same exact thing and be all these robots, but during basic training, they're forming a team. They're building that camaraderie. And about week 3 or 4 is the toughest, where the individuals just get frustrated with each other. And then there's a breakthrough and they start working as a team and they build that camaraderie. And, you know, that's why there's organizations like VFWs and American Legions and things out here, because nobody else in the country went through that experience. And these places are there for us individuals to go and be around people that have the shared experience. You know, we build that bond and it's there for life.
I started laughing during that because I was thinking when you said when they get frustrated with each other and then have a breakthrough, like when we almost broke up, Gina.
it happens. Just like that. That's like part of the stages of team building. Within any organization, whether it's a corporation, any entity.
Any relationship. It's so funny, Rachel, because today I was working with one of our clients we were working in video prospecting and messaging, and somebody brought up on the call because people are trying to get used to seeing themselves on video, and two of the guys were like, yeah, like me and Travis, we Marco Polo each other all the time, like we have thousands of Marco Polos. I had to tell the story how you and I made up through Marco Polo. I know that's like that's a side note, that's a tangent, but that's what we do. That's what we do. We go off on tangents. Let's hear a little bit about, right, so you joined the Army and then you ended up in recruiting. Like how did that happen?
So I joined the Army and I was in the reserve for a little while and decided to go to a drill sergeant unit to become a drill sergeant. And almost immediately after that, my old unit had a call up to go to Iraq in the beginning of the Iraq war. And I got called back to that unit to do that job, which is bulk petroleum transportation. So we drove trucks just like you see deliver fuel to gas stations. That's what I drove all over Iraq, in the very beginning of the war. So, ended up getting hurt over there and, was not able to do push-ups or sit-ups any longer. And as a drill sergeant, you can't not be able to do those things. So I wanted another job I could do full-time. My civilian job, I was teaching truck driving, and the school was getting ready to shut down. So I got this opportunity. They said, why don't you become a recruiter? And I thought, well, okay, I guess I can do that. I really didn't expect to do it as long as I did. I thought it would be a way to get back on active duty really quick. I'd do it for 2 or 3 years and then I'd be done. And my second and third years of recruiting, I was the top reserve recruiter in the country. And at the end of my third year, they did what they called a involuntary conversion with my job. So I was involuntarily converted to be a permanent recruiter. I just got a set of orders one day and said, you're no longer a truck driver. You're now a recruiter.
So were you were on active duty as a recruiter?
Yeah. Yeah.
But some recruiters, I know you and I have worked with the National Guard before. Some recruiters, are they all on active duty or can you come on?
So what there's two types of active duty. You've got the federal active duty orders. And then what Reserve and National Guard do is called Active Guard and Reserve. So you're still part of that component, but you're on active duty orders. So it's your full-time job each day. You get all the same benefits and everything as an active duty soldier.
And the benefits sound pretty good. I mean,
the benefits were great. I mean, I was making close to six figures each year. And if you compared it to a civilian job, I was making well over six figures because some of the pay is non-taxed. Your food and housing pay that you get is non-taxed. My bring home pay was a lot higher than a normal person's that gets taxed. Full medical benefits. I've had several surgeries throughout my life and never had a medical bill in my life. It's paid for. I've got 3 degrees. I'm actually in college for my 4th degree right now. It paid for all of that. It paid for my wife's nursing degree. It's paying for my daughter. She's in a music education major right now, a sophomore. And my daughter's actually getting paid to go to school. So on top of what it's cost, she's making about $1,200 a month extra just to go to school.
I laugh every time you tell me that.
Yeah. Think of all those people that have that student loan debt out there struggling to
the worst.
Pay off, isn't it?
I see. It's the second worst thing I see after medical debt. When I pull some people's credit, like overall is these giant school debt bills. And I'm like, well, see, I didn't go to college. I had the opportunity, but I didn't go because I went to be a performer. But I look at school debt and go, ooh. So, gosh, you make it sound like it's easy to recruit, James, with all these benefits that you got.
Wouldn't you think that?
It seems like it's like I'm ready. I'm 45. Is that too old?
Yeah, can we still enlist?
Well, the problem here is we're all life experienced. I'll put it that way. And so we see the value of these benefits. Yeah. But when you're speaking with somebody 17 to 24 years old and you start speaking about those type of benefits, they don't care. They've been on their parents' insurance plan or, you know, they're going to school and they've got 1,000 people telling them, just take a student loan out. You'll be able to pay it back when you're done.
What are some of the biggest challenges in recruiting and prospecting? Because we're talking sales now. What are the biggest challenges for recruiters?
I would say challenges individually is finding qualified recruits is probably one of the biggest challenges. And I got two prongs to that. First is only about 30% of the population is qualified through either physical standards or moral standards or educational standards. You know, it's not the military of our parents that came out of the Vietnam era. They don't accept everybody. You've got to have a high school diploma for most of them. You've got to meet height and weight standards. We've got an obesity problem here in the United States. So you've got to meet those standards. There's a lot of other medical standards that just we don't think about, you know, common individuals. Asthma is a big one. ADHD, you know, these are all disqualifiers for the military. So you've got that. And then you've got to have an aptitude. So not only do you have to have a degree, but you got to be able to pass a test to get in there, and you've got to stay out of trouble. You know, one crazy party night can completely disqualify you from military service. So that's a big challenge. The second prong to this is recruiters getting over their fear of prospecting to find these individuals. They've got to go through the weeds to find the ones that are qualified. And let's face it, prospecting is not fun.
Yeah, and I want to jump on that for a second, James, because my observation in the training that I've been in with you is, and I think this is the value that you and Ricky have been able to add through Sales Gravy, is that these are recruiters that have never really necessarily been exposed to selling or sales.
Correct.
They've just been told, here's your assignment. You're now a recruiter. You're now in sales. Go. And it's still sales and it's still prospecting. So those of us who are in sales and like prospecting is our everyday life, you know, prospecting sucks, but it sucks even more when you didn't even sign up for the job.
Yeah. So with active duty, especially, you're voluntold sometime in your career for 3 years to be a recruiter. So a lot of times they're just that's it. Here, if you're a career soldier, you're pretty susceptible to becoming a recruiter for 3 years, whether you want to or not. As tough as it is, like you said, Gina, they didn't sign up for it. They didn't go apply for that job knowing that they would have to go through the suck. And they're told, hey, do that. So that's a challenge. National Guard, Reserve, recruiters are all pretty much hired into that position. So there is a little bit of, you know, hey, I'm applying for this, but I still don't think they understand the challenge of finding qualified individuals and how much prospecting they actually have to do. Because even the soldiers that are applying for this, a lot of them believe that they're just going to sit in an office and people are going to walk through our doors and say, hey, I want to join the Army, and we're going to ship them off that day. It just doesn't happen that way.
So if a recruiter sucks at it, does the military pull them off those orders?
They have to suck really bad at it. And not only do they have to suck really bad at it, they've got to do some crazy things to get them in trouble to get out of it.
So they could just be sitting there feeling like I suck because I can't recruit anybody.
Yes. Yeah. And then they've got leaders, you know, that don't understand why they're sucking so bad, because a lot of the leaders got put in that position because they were good at it. Not because they understand why they were good at it, but it's just they were good at it. So right. They believe everybody else should be as good as them. And right. So that, yeah, it unfortunately, several years ago, we had some suicides, things like that, that really opened up the eyes to leadership of, hey, we need to look out for these individuals, like you just said, that may be sitting back saying, you know, I don't understand why I'm not doing so well, or, you know, I'm stuck here. So that is more of the serious side of this is,
wow.
It has led to, you know, suicides.
That's incredible. And the military, from what I gather from the outside looking in, it's very much, okay, this is what you're doing. And so they just sort of expect these individuals to figure it out, and they don't necessarily have a training program. Cause like you said, some of the leaders are just have a really good story maybe. And just, it just is natural. Like I think of David Goggins, who he was placed in recruiting scenario, and he just had a real powerful story. Mm-hmm. Like if you got a good story, then everybody will listen. And of course there was not that many African-American or Black recruiters at that time that he became a recruiter. So he was like a spectacle unto himself. But I can imagine those guys, like, that must be tough.
It is.
That was an observation I made when working with James and watching it. And I was kind of sitting back the first time I kind of watched. And then it hit me, especially with the improv piece of what we do. It's like, these guys and girls have to be telling their story, right? That has to be a piece of the selling for sure, is their story. Why did they enlist? Why are they there? What, I mean, when you can tell your story, it's easier for other people to like be able to connect the dots and relate to the story.
But you have to intertwine that with listening to them. See, you know, part of the Army's recruiting school is talking about your story. And there's a whole week or so of you creating your story in this little binder. Mm. And they're like, go out and tell this story. Well, if you go out and just tell your story, you may push a lot of people off. They may not want to hear it directly, but it's the art of intertwining, listening to them, asking them the questions and relating that to your story and pinning them together. And that's, you know, that's difficult.
Well, it starts with the, actually I just designed some curriculum for Sales Gravy for my spontaneous selling course, which is called Story Selling. It's telling your story, but first and foremost, it's pulling out their story. Like you have to pull out the buyer's story through a discovery process. That's going to help you in the discovery process. Then you tell your story. Like this just happened to me last night. I had a prospecting call at 8:30 PM last night because she's on the West Coast. And like, she started it with, I want to know your story. Tell me about you and what kind of coach you are. Which could, for anybody who follows Jeb or Sales Gravy, could be considered a red herring that she was sending me down like a path. And I'm like, no, we'll get to my story. Let's talk about your story. Right. It's real easy because when people show an interest in us, like this can happen for a salesperson or a recruiter. It's like we have this, we're wired to like, oh, you want to hear my story? Okay. Let me tell you my story. And then you're like, wait, I just lost control of this entire conversation.
So I said in the beginning of this that my second and third years, I was the top recruiter in the country. And I really think that I can put that to one pivotal point in that first year. And I was a headstrong recruiter. I had a story, you know, and I was living the life. I had a wife, two kids, two dogs, two cats, you know, three-bedroom brick ranch home with two brand new cars. And I called that my American dream. And I used that during my interviews, my American dream. You know, I'm living it. And it was all because of the Army that I was able to provide all of that, to have that. And I went into an interview in Cincinnati, Ohio, and it was a young man, probably, I think he was 23 years old, and he lived in a trailer park. And I drove in and I parked and I went in, knocked on the door, and he met me at the door and invited me in. And my first step in, my foot fell through the floor of the trailer, and he's apologizing profusely. You know, and I'm thinking, man, this guy needs the Army. He needs the American dream. And so I did my interview. I thought, man, this is perfect. It got down to the point where, you know, you've got to ask. And so I asked him, are you ready to join? And he said, you know, I don't think I am. He said, I'm pretty happy with where I'm at in life. Yes, I'm looking at your facial expression right now, Rachel. That was probably mine on the inside. You know, I had to keep it in. But I asked him, you know, what was so great about where he was at in life right now? And he said, look, I'm 23 years old. I own this trailer. I own my home. He didn't call it his trailer. I own my home outright. You know, I just had to pay lot rent. I have a car out there that I own outright. I've got a job that I don't hate and I'm making good money at it. He said, I just don't think that the military is right for me right now. And I left that interview and I fumed. I went back to the office and, you know, I complained to every other recruiter around me. And I went home that night and I was yelling in the house, you know, complaining to my wife. How in the world can this guy tell me that he's living the American dream? My foot went through the floor of his trailer. And then it hit me like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I woke up, I sat up and I'm just like, you know what? Just because it's my American dream doesn't mean that it's everybody else's. I've always looked for that leadership position. I've always looked to better myself. I go back to my dad who, despite being an alcoholic, he was very comfortable in life with just doing the minimum. You know, as long as he had food on the table and beer in his belly, then he was happy. You know, I grew up in a house that wasn't the greatest, but it was a roof over our head. We never went hungry. If I wanted something, I typically got it. But my dad never wanted to be in charge of anything. He just went to work, did his hours, and came home. And that was his American.
He was happy with status quo or less than.
Yes. Yes. And a problem that a lot of us have as salespeople or recruiters is that we know what makes us happy. And so we try to sell that. And that's not always what makes others happy. So we've got to sit back and we've got to listen. You know, maybe if I listened a little bit more, I could have went another route and maybe got him, you know, into a reserve job or something like that. But I was just headstrong on what my American dream was. Mm-hmm. And I went in and I told my story that right off the bat. And that's how I was taught to do it. And that's just not the best way to influence others. We've got to be able to open up, listen, and to believe in others. If they tell us they're happy with a trailer that somebody's falling through the floor in, then hey, that's their happiness.
Hey, everybody. You know, the greatest gift that you can give to someone is something that's intangible and free. So the greatest gift you can give us is to give someone you care about the gift of our podcast, somebody that might need to listen to our podcast to get some of the awesome knowledge that you got from us or one of our fantastic guests. So share the love today, post on social media, or just send an email with a link to our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. Now back to the show.
Well, I mean, we can draw all kinds of parallels, right, in sales to this. You know, you started this with only 30% qualify, right, to enlist. And so that comes down to, you know, are you looking at qualified prospects? Because in some ways that kind of narrows it down versus like going after this huge group, you know, that only so many are going to qualify. And then the other part of the qualifying is like, are they ideal? Do they even want this? Are they even interested? And so sometimes we go after not such ideal candidates or prospects because we just want to close the deal.
Yeah, we just want to close it. We don't like prospecting. Less than 1% of the population is in our military. So less than 1%. During World War II, you said that, you know, we had this great American pride and things like that. Still at that point, less than 4%. And that was when they were beating down the doors to try to join. We've got stories of heroes that were 14, 15 years old that joined the Navy during World War II. You know, they faked their birth certificates and joined during that time. We definitely don't have that now, but finding qualified candidates that want to do it is the biggest challenge. And you've got to prospect to do that. You've got to prospect every day and just be relentless at it if you want to be at the top. So like I said, I was one of those that always wanted to be at the top. Others just wanted to be status quo. They did their minimum and got out of there.
What would be, before we start to wrap up, and we do have some signature questions for you, and we also besides our regular signature questions, Rachel, we need to, there's one more I want to add in there that I'll add in just to throw James off his game a little bit. What is some, maybe a piece of advice that you could give people in sales in general or recruiters, just based on your experience of what you've seen as a recruiter or based on your experience as a master sales trainer, et Sales gravy, some wisdom, some nuggets that you can leave behind.
Have a hobby. I can't stress that enough. You know, if I'm going to give you some wisdom, because sales and recruiting, it's relentless. You're at it every day. You know, amen. You close that deal, you're looking for the next one. I say that this train doesn't stop. You know,
I have a question. What when you say hobby, what's hobby? What does that mean?
Something.
I'm kidding. I clearly need to work on that. That's all. I just.
Yes, Gina, you do. You do. You need to find some, even if it's wine tasting. Okay.
Oh, wine tasting is a hobby. I mean, that does not.
There you go.
That hobby happens every other night. That's fine. Don't worry.
Yeah, you've got to get your mind off of it. I think I've used education as my hobby, and that's a weird hobby to have. But I'm a lifelong learner, and I love learning new things. And so that's my getaway, is to take classes or continuously learning.
Well, I think that's a really great piece of advice, because we don't ever really hear that. So I think that's an awesome piece of advice for anybody listening to this episode, because it is relentless. You should get a hobby. As we get ready to wrap up, I have a question for you, James. And, the show is called Women Your Mother Warned You About. So I would like to hear what you think the definition of a woman your mother warned you about is. How would you define it?
Yeah. A woman my mother warned me about. My mother is a little more on the traditional side. So she did all the cooking and cleaning and things like that growing up, and she warned me to try to find somebody like that. Since I grew up in that environment, that she wanted me to find somebody like that. So she warned me against, I guess, headstrong, independent women out there. And
how'd that work for you? Did that work?
No. I married the headstrong, independent woman that is, and she keeps me on my toes every day. So, yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. I will now, I'll turn it over to Rachel.
How would you define the word sexy, James?
Who? Intelligence. It's sexy. To me, is somebody that I can carry an intelligent conversation with, and that challenges me. And that goes back to probably, the being attracted to headstrong women. They can keep me on my toes. And so intelligence is sexy to me.
I like it. And what is the best advice you've ever been given throughout your life?
This necessarily isn't advice, but it's a song lyric that has stuck with me through my entire life. That I think is advice. And it's from Aerosmith. And they've got a lyric in there that says, everybody's got their dues in life to pay. And every time that I've been challenged or wondered why things were tough, I've thought of that song lyric. And, being a soldier, I can overcome anything thrown at me. That's one of the things the military taught me. But everybody's got their dues in life to pay. There's going to be those times that we're going to be challenged. And we've got to stay strong, resilient, and get through it.
Oh, give us your famous phrase that you taught me in training.
Uh-oh.
It involves dirt and water and getting up.
So, That's a military thing as well.
I love it though.
When you're down, just rub some dirt on it, drink some water, and drive on. So,
true. I use it all the time.
True story.
Just don't say. Go ahead.
Wait! I know what you're gonna say. I know what you're gonna say. Are you gonna say it?
Just don't say rub it off. Yeah, that's not a phrase that you want to put, especially in a group of soldiers. So
a group of soldiers, and there's one woman in the room who would be me.
Mm-hmm.
Just be careful how you use the word. Anyway, continue.
Anyway, final question. Any advice you wish you had been given, James?
There's a lot of advice out there that I would have wished I'd been given, but
pick one.
Start investing early.
That's a good one. GameStop's all bought up right now, but that is a really good one. I wish I had too. And when my child was born, her father-in-law at the time started her an investment account the day she was born. And I just thought that was brilliant. And I wish I had done or had done. And
yeah, my kids every year for their birthday got bonds. And my daughter just used hers to put a down payment on our first vehicle she owns.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was pretty good. And my son's in a personal finance class right now, and he got his first paycheck yesterday. So he's already talking about, hey, I put this amount in savings. And so it's making me happy with that. But I was probably given that advice, but somebody didn't sit down and really explain to me the importance of it and what I should have done earlier on. But life is good. I mean, I'm semi-retired right now. I get a paycheck for the rest of my life just to get up and breathe. So that is nice.
You're having fun. You're teaching others. It's awesome having you on the show today. I think you got out without too much pain, without too much scar tissue. You feel
totally
good.
Not what I thought. I was waiting to be hammered, you know.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to hear about that offline.
The
meat grinder is what he said. But we do have to wrap up because I do have to get on a call with a prospect that is waiting for me. So thanks, James, for being here with us today to talk about military recruiting and how it relates to sales and how it is sales. So thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Warners, for listening to this episode of The Women Your Mother Warned You About, sponsored by Sales Gravy. Hey, we have some really awesome courses at Sales Gravy University. Go check that out, sales.university.com, something like that.
Salesgravy.university.
Salesgravy.university. Thank you, James, because I'm sure Jeb will beat me up for getting that wrong, but you guys know what I'm saying. It'll be in the show notes.
I can save you though, because I just started my first course with Gina yesterday. I did my first course of Fanatical Prospecting Bootcamp. And even though I know Gina inside and out, basically a lot of deep, dark secrets, I just was super impressed with the material that she covered. And I think every salesperson should take that course and probably all the rest of them too.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. That really means a lot to me, because when someone knows you so well, I know you're not just like, you know, giving me lip service on that. So
no, totally. I was like super jacked up after that class.
Sweet. Keep making those calls. Keep up with that call block. All right, Warners, we got to wrap up once again. Thanks again for listening to this episode. For more information about us and our show and all the things, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. And of course, go check out salesgravy.com and salesgravy.university. And all the things. Rachel, you have any final words before we take off?
Bye, Warners.
That's it. We're out. Bye.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah. It doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.